Reader. And I hope you don't mind if I can I walk around? Okay, thank you. I don't stand behind podiums anymore. I don't have to hide. Wow, look at all of you. This is great. I'm so glad to see all of you. First I want to tell you, is this a fabulous dress or what? Okay. So I want to tell you that 15 years ago when we had our first See How convention as See How, I was the keynote speaker on Saturday night. Thank you. And I wore this dress. Okay? And I look better in it today than I did then. So this program really works. And, you know, when I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about, you know, I've been listening to all the workshops and everything this weekend and talking to people. And, you know, recovery is my passion. I'm passionate about recovery. And so when you get me started talking, watch out, because, you know, I can talk for a long time. And so I was thinking about it, and first what I wanted to talk about is the fact that that I am a compulsive eater. And what does that mean? And so I was thinking about it for me, like, how do I know I'm a compulsive eater? I mean, I say I'm a compulsive eater. The first meeting that I went to, everybody, you know, said, stand up and say you're a compulsive eater, and I'm a people pleaser, so I did. But I didn't know what that was, and I, you know, how do I know if I'm a compulsive eater or not? So I was thinking about it, and so let's see. You help me out. I'm going to tell you, and you tell me if you think I'm a compulsive overeater. So first of all, it was almost 300 pounds. Most people who are almost 300 pounds are compulsive overeaters, because most people who don't care about food don't eat themselves to 300 pounds. And so, but I did learn that you don't have to be 300 pounds to be a compulsive overeater. I didn't know that, you know, I didn't know that, but I did learn that here. But I was, and I ate in a way that I maintained a 300-pound weight. And I was going up, I was going down, I was going up, I was going down. But to maintain obesity to that extent, I had to eat a lot of food. And I had to eat it a lot, all the time. So that was the first clue. Second clue is that I would eat food when I wasn't hungry. And I don't know about you, but it didn't really matter if I was hungry or not hungry. I still ate food. I ate food before it was defrosted. Most normal people don't do that. Okay, but I couldn't wait. So one is defrosting, I have to eat the other one. And, you know, I order three because I have to eat one while I'm waiting for the next one to cool off or chill up or whatever it is. And so I did that. I ate your food. I have to tell you a funny story. Last week, a friend of mine who is a waitress says to me, I can't believe I have a friend who's a waitress, but she says to me, you won't believe what happened. And I said, what? And she says, well, I had a customer. I was serving at the bar, and I had this customer sitting next to another customer. And the one customer ate half her food and left. And the other customer ate her food off her plate. Can you believe it? And I'm thinking, what's your point? I have thought about doing that a lot. Now, my only thing is, I would try not to let anybody see that I was doing that. But, you know, she was mortified. And I'm like, I don't really get it, why that's like, so, like, I've thought of doing that so many times. I mean, it's just sitting there. They're just going to throw it away, you know. I can eat it. So that's it. You know, I eat off other people's plates. I eat out of the trash. Most normal people don't eat out of the trash. And, you know, and when I first started the program and I talk about what I did with food and everything, and I'd say, oh, I ate out of the trash, like it's pretty. Like, oh, yeah, I ate out of the trash. It was nice. The truth is, when it's in the trash, it's trash. So I ate trash, okay? Most normal people don't do that. So I think we're really getting a sense here that I am a compulsive eater. I stole food. I had a roommate who was a diabetic. And so she had to have stashes of sugar around, because if she went into, like, you know, diabetic coma, she may need it. I didn't care. I had to have it. I had to eat it. So I ate her stashes. And one day she was, like, crashing and going, where's my stash? I don't know. I didn't eat it. Okay, here's the other thing. I lie about food. Okay, normal people don't lie about food. Do you know why? I'm going to tell you why. You want to know why normal people don't lie about food? They don't need to. They're not doing anything weird with food. I lie about food. I steal food. I cheat. I do whatever I have to do to get the food. So I think we're all convinced now that I'm a compulsive overeater. Now, here's the thing. I have to remember that because I didn't qualify, but right now I have 21 years, 6 months, and 3 weeks of abstinence today.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I've been maintaining for, in September, will be 19 years with about 120-pound weight loss. And that's actually more of a miracle than being abstinent consistently because, you know, maintaining anything has always been very hard for me, maintaining anything. You know, I can't stick to it. I'll do a diet for a while. I'll do a relationship for a while. I'll do whatever. But I can't stick to it. So it's important for me to remember that I'm a compulsive eater because it's really easy to think, well, I've been the same size for 19 years. And I don't really think about food anymore, to be honest. I don't care at this moment if I ever eat sugar or flour again. And I've said it for many years. I really don't care. And so it can be easy for me to think, oh, I'm fine. You know, I'm better now. And it's important for me not to think like that, because if I think like that, that takes me out. So that's why I wanted to start with just convincing me, reminding me, and if you want to come along, that's fine, that I am a compulsive overeater. And there's no doubt in my mind at all. Okay, so now that we've had that established, this is what I want to talk about. Last night, our fabulous speaker, I don't know where Shannon is, but she was wonderful. I loved her. Excellent. You are fabulous. Thank you so much. Thank you. You're fabulous. You know, and she talked about, you know, looking up what keynote meant and kind of focusing on a theme of some sort. And I was thinking about that. I do have to say, though, that, you know, it really would have helped me if you sucked a little bit last night. Really. Would have helped me look a little better. But anyway, it's all right. It's okay. So I was thinking about a theme for my share tonight. And, you know, humor is one of them. I have to say that I try to share with humor. I have to, because if I don't laugh, I'm going to kill myself. You know, I mean, life is hard. And I got to tell you, you know, just because I'm abstinent and just because I'm working a program and just because I'm not walking around obese doesn't mean that life isn't hard. You know, I have a twisted sense of my own self and how I engage with the world. And so it can be difficult if I'm not focused, if I'm not paying attention. So anyway, so I was thinking about what kind of theme I would like to share tonight, and the word that kept coming up for me is freedom. And, you know, I get the chills when I think about it, because, you know, this disease did a lot of things to me. It made me fat. It made me unhappy. It made me sick. I had thyroid cancer, which I believe was from the way I was eating. I've had my gallbladder removed. I was on high blood pressure medication. I had heart palpitations. You know, and this was all in my 20s. Okay, so I did a lot of damage to my body, a lot of physical damage to myself. And, you know, and compulsive eating did a lot. It robbed me of my sense of safety. I always felt like they're chasing me. They're going to get me. And, you know, I just never felt like steady. But the real, real thing that this disease did was rob me of my freedom. I was, you know, when we talk about bondage of self. And, you know, I was not free. I lived in the land of free, you know, but I was not free. I was a prisoner of my own mind. I was a prisoner of my own thinking. And here's something that I learned in recovery, okay, because I thought, okay, when I first got it, I thought, okay, well, I just got to fix everything and then I'll be fine. And I got to tell you, that really doesn't work. But what I have discovered is that I may not be able to control my thinking, but I can shift my perception. And that's where the freedom comes. The freedom does not come from controlling you or controlling my environment. See, I really thought, okay, like there was a period there where I thought, you know, I just don't have any, like, nice people in my life. You know, I only have, like, leeches, people who suck me dry, you know. And so what my solution is, I just have to find nicer people. Right? Because you people are not nice. I got to find other people. And what I discovered is that it was me. It was me that as long as I was the way I was in this bondage of myself, self-centered, overly sensitive, you know, afraid, antisocial, all the things that I was, all self, then that was all I was going to attract. And if I wanted to have freedom, to have different relationships and different experiences, then I was going to have to change. And I was not happy about that. It's much easier if I make you change. And change is hard, and change is scary. And I have to say that when I first came into recovery, I didn't come hopping and skipping and singing and grateful and happy to be here at all. I don't know about you guys. Maybe you did. I really didn't. I had tried every diet. I had, I think somebody said this earlier today or last night, I had gone up and down over 100 pounds many times in my life. I'm an obsessive, compulsive. My favorite forms of diet were starvation, because it's quick and it's punishing, and I felt like I didn't deserve any food because I was so, you know, weak. So I would starve myself for months at a time, and the weight would come off, but I wasn't free. You know, it wasn't the same kind of thing like being abstinent. It was white knuckling through the whole thing. So, you know, all of this stuff, and then I got to my first meeting, and I did it on a dare, and the trick was, I said, okay, I'm going to go, because, you know, we don't push anybody until they're ready. And, you know, most people don't follow that. And the person who brought me in definitely didn't follow that. So every week it was like, we're going to a meeting, we're going to a meeting, we're going to a meeting. And finally I said, okay, I will go once, and then you leave me alone with my food for the rest of my life. And my plan, and this was in my late 20s, my plan was to just eat until I died. Now, that sounded like a really good plan to me. You know, it's like, my thinking is really screwy, but that made a lot of sense to me. I'm just going to keep eating until this is over. And most days when I woke up, I was really angry that I woke up and said, I have to do this again. Life was so hard. It was so hard to get out of bed. It was just so hard. So then in my 20s, I had, like, probably an undiagnosed nervous breakdown. I was, you know, hitting 300 pounds. I was sick, all of this. And I gave up. And so this person said, come to a meeting. And I said, I will if you leave me alone after that. And they agreed. Little did I know that they knew the secret, which is once they get you in, they slam the door behind you and they don't let you out. Yeah, all this, oh, you come in for the vanity, you stay for the sanity, come and we'll love you till you can love yourself, all that kind of stuff, you know. Well, they lock the door. So I'm sitting in this meeting, Cole Street meeting, my home group, and I'm sitting in a circle in this gym with, you know, dirty sock smell, and I don't know what the heck is going on, but the woman speaking had lost over 200 pounds. And God knew how to get my attention, because he had a small window of opportunity, because I was like halfway out the door already, you know. And I don't remember a lot about the meeting, but I will say, and these are the miracles that happen. You know, we talk about the gifts of the program. These are the miracles, because I didn't want to be there. I didn't have any hope. I didn't want to try again. One of the things I said to the person who brought me was, I said, I don't want to try and fail one more time. I can't do it. The failing is so devastating. I mean, I can lose weight. I've lost weight many, many times. But the failing of going back up, you know, you lose weight and everyone's like, oh, you look so great. Oh, you look so wonderful. And then you start to put the weight back on and they go, okay. You know, and they don't say anything. And it's devastating. So I said, I'd rather just be, how many people said this? I'd rather just be fat, right? Thank you very much. Than lose the weight and put it back on. You know, and then I said also, you know, and it's much healthier to be fat than it is to go up and down. Right? It's just healthier. It's better on my heart. It's better on my clothes. It's just healthier if I just stay fat instead of go up and down and up and down. It's crazy, crazy thinking. So I'm at this meeting, and somebody's sitting next to me, this young little girl, and when the meeting was over, I'm like, okay, I'm getting out. And she grabbed me by the arm. You know, we don't do this anymore. I'm old, you know, this is old school. This is 21 years ago. She grabbed me by the ear. She says, you've got to get a sponsor. And she's like, okay, now here's the thing. Okay, so she's, and I'm like 300 pounds in a muumuu, right, one of three muumuus, with big hair and big glasses, so you couldn't tell that I was fat. And, you know, that whole thing. And, you know, and the nice nails, the nice toes, and the big hair, and you couldn't tell I was 300 pounds, because you're stupid. And So she's grabbing me around, running me around. I've got to find you a sponsor. And everybody's like, no, I'm not available. No, I'm not available. No, I'm not available. Nobody was available, right? Finally, she went to the literature table, and she got the literature person to agree to sponsor me. Now, I found out months later, because I got to know these people, I went to the meeting every week and all that, that they were all available. They were just scared of me. And they don't want to do it. They're like, no, I'm not available. No. You know, and my sponsor said to me, I was terrified, but I didn't know how to say no. Thank God she was a people pleaser. Thank God she was. Then she says to me, call me at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Now, I don't know about you guys, compulsive eaters, but in my world of compulsive eating, there is no 6 o'clock in the morning. I said to her, is there one of those in the morning, too? Because I, you know, I get up like at 8:30, roll out of bed with this huge hangover because I had just binged the night before. I crawl on the floor to maybe, if it's a good day, take a shower. Most of the time, no. You know, what can I say? And put on one of the three muumuus and go to work so I can make money to get my food. And that was my life, you know. And all of a sudden, she wants me to get up at 6 in the morning. Okay, so here I am at 5:45 staring at the clock. Staring at the clock because I got to call her at 6 o'clock. I was terrified, like, they're going to come get me. If I don't call her at 6 o'clock, here comes the bus. It's coming. And for 30 days, and she was a toll call, so when I got my phone bill, 30 days, 6 a.m. But I got to say that the fear and the desperation took me to a place that I was so willing and so scared that I did the program in a way that hooked me. And I continue to do that. And, you know, people ask me all the time, really, I wish I had a good answer, but how do you do it for so long? How have you been abstinent for so long? And I don't know. I mean, it's a God thing. The first day was a God thing because I went from eating, from not being able to stop eating for 5 minutes. I had food everywhere. I tell this story all the time. I had food in my pockets. I had food in my purse. I had food in my car. I couldn't go from my car to my apartment without eating. I couldn't go from the supermarket where I bought the food that I'm going to binge at home. I couldn't get from the supermarket into my house without eating. So I had to buy two of everything. So one set for the car, and then one set. And then I'd get home, and I'd be in the garage, and then I'd have to look around to make sure nobody was seeing me carrying all these bags because they all know I live alone, and I got all these bags, right? It's like insanity. It's crazy. So, you know, I just went through all of that, and I think I lost my space, my place, but that's okay. All right. So they asked, how do you stay abstinent so long? How do you stay abstinent so long? And the one thing that I say, I don't know if it's true or not, because it really is a God thing, and, you know, it's really hard to describe spirituality. It's hard to describe surrender. If I could describe it to you, I would. It's an experience. It's very hard to describe. But what I will say is that I found a way to work it as I worked it when I was desperate without having to be desperate. Now, that's the key, right? Because I don't want to live my life desperate. If I'm going to have to go in and out and in and out in order to be desperate enough to come back in and get abstinent again, then go out and be desperate so I can come back in. And people have said that to me. They said, you know what? I'm going to go out. And then I'll come back, you know, and start the 30 days over again and get really good at, you know, doing everything. I'm like, why do you have to go out? Can't you just, like, start doing that now? Do you know how many of my friends went out and have not come back? They're still not back. Never get back. I mean, this is Russian roulette we're playing here with food. You know, you go out and take one bite and think you're going to come right back. Think again. You know, that's scary. And this is the thing I'm going to tell you because I've seen a lot in 21 years. The worst part, it's not so bad that you go out and it takes you a long time to come back and you're out there struggling. The worst part is you go out, you take a bite, and you come back. And then next week, you're like, that wasn't so hard. You go out, you take a bite, and then you come back. And the disease is, excuse me, fucking with you. Right? Because it lets you have one. I had a sponsee who did that. She went and she had one item and got right back on. And she's like, oh, that wasn't so hard. And then a week later, she had another item. And they got right back on. Oh, you know, this is good. You know, this is so easy, I can have two. So the next week she had two, and by the third week she was eating dozens. This is not easy. There's no trick to it. It's not like you can figure out how to get around the disease. The disease is too smart. I am smart, and the disease is smarter than me. Whatever the disease, you know, whatever I come up with, disease comes up with something else. It's my terrorist, right? Whatever I come up to fight it, it comes up with something else. And whatever worked, now it's going to come up with it again. And if it doesn't work anymore, it comes up with something new. So now it knows, I got 21 years, it knows I'm not going to believe it when it says, you don't have to go to meetings. And you know what? The truth is, I don't have to. You know that old AA joke where the newcomer says to his sponsor, how long do I have to go to these meetings? And he said, till you want to. You know? So, well, that's the truth. So I want to. So that's not a problem. So the disease isn't going to try that on me. But the disease will try other things, you know? And I got to stay one step ahead. So this whole idea of working it as if I'm desperate without having to be desperate, because I don't want to live my life desperate. I lived too many years of my life desperate. I lived too many years of my life wanting to die. So when we talk about freedom, the freedom is in working it as if I'm desperate, but being free to live my life. Now, there's a lot of freedoms and there's a lot of restrictions. I have to say, and this is the truth, you can take it, leave it, what? Working a program requires sacrifice. You just don't get to do everything you want to do. I don't get to do it. You know, I have many, many invitations I've had to pass up because I had a commitment at a meeting. Or, you know, I've talked to people who say, oh, I'm going to go around a cruise around the world for 2 months. I'm not doing that. Okay? I'm not going to be on a floating buffet for 2 months, away from my program, away from my friends, away from... Now, this is me. You know, I'm only sharing with you my experience. I have to make priorities in my life, okay? If I need dialysis, I'm not going to say to the doctor, you know what? I got invited to a concert tonight, so I'm going to skip my dialysis and I'll see you next week. Because next week I'll be dead. And this is how I think about it. You know, people joke about me, well, I hope they're joking, that I'm hardcore. You know, there was a thing going around early on, you know, it's like, Howe is the last house on the block, and Ruth is the last house, the last room in the house as a sponsor, and nobody wants Ruth as a sponsor because she's so tough, and, you know, but the truth is, it's not me. It's not me, you know, it's that I truly, truly believe that I am one bite away from dying. Not one bite away from 300 pounds, which is true, and not one bite away from maybe losing my marriage, or losing my business because I can't go to work. You know, I am one bite away from dying. And that's important. I mean, that's serious. That's not fooling around, you know. And I love the Big Book, and I love our literature because the Big Book doesn't pull any punches. Big Book talks every word is important. So one of the things that I love is that it talks in the 12 and 12 actually about that we're, as addicts, we're tormented by loneliness. And, you know, that hit me in my core because that's one of my core things. I feel that I am all alone. When I grew up, I felt I was all alone. There was nobody there for me. I felt disconnected to the world. Now, it says that we, as addicts, are incapable of having intimate relations with other human beings. And I really I get that. Now, I don't have the inability to have intimate relations with other people because I'm fat. But that's what I thought. I thought, well, it's because I'm fat that I can't have relationships with other people. It's the opposite. The truth is that I'm fat because I can't connect with other human beings. And when I can't connect and I feel tormented, I'm not lonely. That's not what it says. It doesn't say, oh, we're a little lonely. It says we're tormented by loneliness. That's me. So when I'm tormented by loneliness, or I'm tormented by self-loathing, or I'm tormented by this sense that I have no purpose or no value and don't belong on this planet, then I have to eat to ease that pain. And so when I started working the program, I really did think that the solution was to come in, get abstinent, lose the weight, and then everything would be fine. And what I discovered when I got here is that when I lose the weight, everything is not fine. Everything was not fine, which is why I had the weight in the first place. And so that's why I'm still here. You know, I mean, I lost, you know, I have 19 years of maintenance, so I lost my weight in the first, you know, couple of years. But I'm still here. Why am I still here? You know, do I like being able to wear the same clothes I've been wearing for years? Yes. Do I like, you know, to be able to walk around without huffing and puffing or worrying about having a heart attack? Yes. Do I like that I don't have to walk and worry that my legs are rubbing together and they're so raw they're bleeding? Yes, I like that. You know, do I like the fact that I can sleep lying down instead of sitting up, which is what I had to do because I had sleep apnea and I had repeating and I couldn't sleep lying down because the pressure of the weight on my chest would stop my heart from beating? Yes, I'm thrilled about all that. But you know what? If all of that was true and I was still tormented by loneliness and self-loathing and self-hatred, then I'd rather be eating. It's just too painful for me. I can't take it. Other people maybe can take it. I can't take that pain. So I need to be free from that. And, you know, and that's why I do the work that I do. I mean, I take this really seriously. I have to say, here's the thing. I take my program and my disease really seriously. I take me not so seriously, I have to say, you know. And that's taken time because it used to be the other way around. It's like I'm taking me really seriously and the disease, so what? So I'm fat, big deal. But, you know, it talks in the book also about getting right-sized. And learning how to react appropriately. See, now I never did that, so I will give you an example. Okay, and this is, you know, I mean, this is years ago, but it's still ingrained in my brain. Okay, so it's Christmas Eve, and I have to go to my office Christmas party. And it's, I don't know, 5 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever, and I go to my car, and I'm sure you've all done this, I, you know, click the handle of the car, and my nail pops off. Well, I'm going to die because I have to go to this party and I don't have a fingernail. Now, I got to tell you, I freaked out. I mean, this was insane. I went crazy looking, banging on nail salon doors, Christmas Eve at 5 o'clock, begging for somebody to fix my nail because I could not go to the party without a nail. That sounds really silly, right? Okay. Now, the other end of the extreme, I had cancer. I had cancer twice. I was about a year abstinent. I had already done my steps. I'd done my inventory. I worked with my sponsor, same sponsor, for the whole year. And I was at a meeting, and I was sharing my story, and it came out that I had cancer. And my sponsor came up to me and said, "You had cancer?" She didn't even know because it wasn't in my inventory. I didn't talk about it. It was not a big deal. Now, she knew I broke my fingernail on Christmas Eve because I did a lot of writing on that. Now, this is the insanity of this disease, right? So what's supposed to be big is insignificant and small, and I'm in denial. And what's supposed to be just life stuff that's just not that big a deal, I want to call suicide prevention. That's my thinking. So that's where I'm not free, because my actions, my behavior, is based on what I think. It isn't based on what's real. You know, one of the definitions of a compulsive eater is someone who eats food to alter their reality. And when they eat certain foods, their reality is altered. That's me. I cannot tolerate reality. I cannot tolerate what is. So I have to make it be what I need it to be so that I'm okay. And food did that for me. Food altered it chemically, and when I stopped to didn't do food anymore, then I did other things like denial, like, you know, perception issues, you know, it's like switching things around, projecting stuff on you that's really mine, all of those things is all altered because I cannot deal with reality. I can't. And it has nothing to do with whether I'm fat or not. I can't deal with reality on my own. So I have to look for ways to change the reality, or I have to find a way to be able to tolerate. And one of the freedoms that I found, and I went through this also with my family. You know, I had a lot of issues with my family. I come from a very dysfunctional family. And I was wounded. You know, and over the years, I've done a lot of work on my childhood. I'm not going to talk about that here because I've healed a lot and I've kind of gone, you know, to new levels with that. But I was very, very wounded. And as a result of that, I suffered a lot of things, both as a child and as an adult. And, you know, and I did a lot of work with my family. I did a lot of work with my parents. I was here 2 years ago, shared in a workshop, and I shared that my mother had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer that month, and she did die a few months later. So this November will be 2 years since she passed. And, you know, and I was able to be clean with her, and I was able to be of service to her before she passed. Now, here's the funny thing. My sister called me. My mother was sick for about 3 months. My sister called me one day, and she said, before my mom passed, and she said, you know, cancer doesn't change people. I said, I know. My mother did not change one iota. She was the same self-centered, you know, sounding familiar, self-centered, you know, obnoxious, critical, unloving person that she was her whole life. But that didn't matter. The freedom for me was I did it for me. I did it for me so that when she passed, I didn't have any regret. And I didn't have any feelings like I wasn't able to do what I wanted to do out of fear. Fear paralyzes me. Fear is the thing that paralyzes me, and fear is the thing that motivates me. A few years ago, I spoke at one of the workshops. It wasn't here, but and they said to me, your topic is fear. And so when I started to speak, I said, they told me my topic is fear, but they didn't tell me if it's pro or con. So I'm going to talk pro on fear. This is what fear does. It can paralyze me, and without a program and without a higher power and without steps and without a sponsor, fear paralyzes me. I cannot move. I can't get out of my house. I can't pick up the phone. I can't do anything. Fear paralyzes me. Now, with program and a higher power and a sponsor and the steps, fear motivates me. Fear motivates me. If without fear, I don't have to have faith. Without fear, I don't have to go to God. I don't have to reach for the things that will give me the feeling of safety and comfort when I'm afraid. You know, that old thing that courage is being afraid and doing it anyway, not having fear. And so for me, freedom is also about not having fear, but being able to have fear and do it anyway. Or being able to be, afraid and confront that. Somebody shared, too, I think maybe it was last night, said, you know, bring it in. And one of the things that I do about fear and pain and all the things that I've been afraid of for so long that have paralyzed me is I bring them in. And I say, you know, take it on. Let's do it face to face because I'm tired of running. I am tired of running from the fear. I'm tired of running from the pain. I'm tired of running from my own head. You know, the truth is that I have a warped mind. I don't know why. I don't know if, like, my neck got twisted when I was born or somebody dropped me on my head or God just decided to grace me with warped thinking so I could be a compulsive eater and come here and find him. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But I do know that I have warped thinking and that if you put 10 people in a room and I am one of them, I will think different than everybody else. Okay, that's just the truth. So, and I always say to my sponsees or anyone else who will listen, if you have an idea, assume it's a bad one and run it by somebody else. And that's what I do, because if it's my idea, it's a bad one. And if it isn't a bad one, I'm going to turn it into a bad one, because I'm going to do something to whack it out of, you know, what it's supposed to intend it to be. So I just have to be very careful, and I have to be vigilant. So I'm going to start wrapping it up a little bit here, but I want to bring forward to today and talk about the kind of freedoms that I have today. Like I said, I am free from the compulsion to eat. I am free from the physical cravings for sugar and flour. I have been for a really long time. You know, I got married 7 years ago. See, that's the other thing, right? I was never going to get married. Never. I was never going to marry because no one would ever love me. And, you know, and I did meet somebody. And I have to say this, too. I was so mad. But, oh, my God, the first 10 years of my recovery, I was a dating machine. Oh, my God, I'm like the personal ads, the Match.com, the computer dating, the matchmaker, the whatever was out there, you know. And I would see the same three guys wherever I went. You know, you go to this dating thing, you got 100 women and three guys. And then you go over here, and you got 100 women and the same three guys, right? And then I had, okay, now explain this to me. I had a lifetime membership to Great Expectations. Now, if that's not planning to fail before you even start, it's kind of like a lifetime membership to Weight Watchers. I mean, if it's supposed to help, why do you need a lifetime membership? But that's, you know, that's what they do to us out there. So for 10 years, I'm like a dating machine. I'm going to find a man, you know, well, and it didn't happen. It didn't happen. And, I mean, I found a lot of men, but, you know, they didn't find me. And, you know, people say, I don't know why you're not in a relationship, and, you know, and I couldn't figure it out. And I am getting to a point. This is what I figured out. I was mad about it. I had my resentments about it, and I was mad at God. And then I discovered that being mad at God was actually a good thing, because that meant I actually have a relationship with God. Because you can't really be mad at something that you don't believe in or that you don't believe is involved in what's happening. So that kind of gave me some comfort. But I kept looking for what I could learn from this. Why is this happening? I mean, I really do believe everything happens for a reason. So why is this happening? What I discovered is, if I want to be in a healthy relationship, and it doesn't just have to be a relationship with another person, but if I want to be in a healthy relationship in my life, to have a healthy relationship with my life, which means with me, with you, with friends, with work, whatever, just to have a healthy energy of how I deal with my life, I have to be healthy. And I kept looking for them, but I wasn't healthy. So when I look for them, the healthy ones are running. I mean, they are running really fast because I'm crazy. I'm crazy. Sickness attracts sickness and health attracts health, right? So all I kept saying to me, keep working on yourself. The healthier you get, the more you're going to attract help. Just keep working on yourself. And that's what kept me going, because I was pissed. Everybody else around me was having relationships, having sex, whatever, you know. And I'm like, okay, come on. But it kept me going. And I had a situation where one more time I went after somebody and it didn't work out, and I had what I refer to lovingly as an exorcism. And I spent 3 days in my apartment just gut-wrenching crying, just sobbing from the soul, from the inner depths of my soul, and walking around my apartment going, I'm done. I'm done begging people to love me. I'm done being afraid. I'm done feeling broken. I'm done. I'm just done. And if I'm just going to be doing program, there's a paragraph, I think it's in the 12th step, where it talks about, and every 12th tradition, every tradition meeting, I'm reading that paragraph. Some of us don't get families, so we get to be of service in the program. And we get, you know, we have the time because we don't have children and we don't have spouses, so we get to be of service in the program. And I'd read that every time it came. Every time! I'm like, that's me, you know? So I kept doing and doing, and I had this exorcism thing, and I said, I'm done. I'm done running, and if I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life, so be it. It's got to be okay, because I'm done. I'm done destroying everything. I'm done. And something happened, and this is the freedom that I'm talking about. There's a level, and you don't know it till you're there. I wish I could tell you, oh, it's coming, or do this and this and this, and then you'll get it. I don't know, but you don't know it till you're there. But when you're there, you feel it. It's like a lifting happens. And I'm sure you've experienced it. You know, it talks in the book about the spiritual experience, and that most of us have that educational kind where we're kind of going along, little baby steps, learning as we go, you know. But every once in a while, you get smacked in the head, and there's this, like, lightning bolt kind of experience. And I've had a few of those in my recovery, and it's like this, what freedom would look like if you could see it. I don't know how to describe it, but it's just this thing that wells up inside, and then you just kind of see it go away. And one of the things that I've discovered is when I shift, I don't shift back. I may shift to something else that's a challenge or a problem or whatever, but I don't shift back to who I was. I have been altered. I have been changed forever when I have those experiences. And that's why I'm here. Those are the freedoms, because today I don't live in fear. Today, I don't feel like I don't deserve to be on the planet. You know, it was a huge awakening when I realized I don't have to earn my space here. I'm a human being. I just get to be here. I don't have to earn it. I don't have to work more than anybody else. I don't have to be prettier than anybody else. I don't have to pay people. I used to pay people to be my friend. Well, if you go with me, I'll pay. You know, I bought a boyfriend a car when I was 18 years old. It's like, that's crazy. God, I wish I had that back. That was a lot of money, though. But that was because I thought I have to earn it. And you know what? I don't have to earn it. And that's one of the freedoms that I got. And one of the gifts of the program on some level is I don't have to work as hard to be. I don't know if that makes sense, but you know what? I had to work so hard just to be okay, just to be here. Like, being here was hard. Where am I going to sit? Who am I going to talk to? Am I underdressed? Am I overdressed? What am I going to say? What do they think of me? That it was too hard. I'll just stay home. I'll just stay home. It's just too hard, you know? It's not so hard today. Today, I work my program hard so I can live my life easy. I just want easy. I want peace of mind. I want to be free. I want to be able to decide what I want to do. I don't want to not do something because I'm afraid. I want to be able to not do it because I don't want to. No one ever asks me if I want to. It's either you do it or you don't do it, and that's it. You know what? And so I never thought, do I want to? I remember a woman once shared with me, and she said, I had such low self-esteem that I thought when I walked down a dark alley and a guy in a dumpster asked me out, I had to go. And I get that. You know, it's that kind of thing. Nothing to the guys. No, you know, I'm just using an example. But my point is that I felt if you wanted to give me a crumb, who am I to say, no, I deserve better? When I was in sixth grade, so that makes me 11, a girl used to beat me up every day. Every day after school, this girl would beat me up. And I stood there for months. I stood there, and she would hit me and hit me and hit me, and I would just stand there. And finally, after months, she stopped and she says, like, why aren't you hitting me? She couldn't get it while I was just standing there. She's like, why don't you hit me back? Or why don't you run away or something? And you know what? It never occurred to me. It never occurred to me. She's hitting me. I must deserve it. I have no right to say, no, don't do that. And that's how I lived my whole life. That's how I lived my whole life until I got into recovery and started to find my value. You know, I tried to, I'm going to wrap it up, I promise. Maybe. So you don't really want to see the fashion show, do you? No, yes, yo, it's fabulous. Yes, you do. Okay, so wrapping it up really quickly. I get emotional at the wrapping it up part. One, because I don't want to be done, because I love talking about this, and I love that all of you are looking at me, and I'm okay. It sounds silly. No. It wasn't to get applause, really. No, it was to try to I was the kid in school who, when you had to do an oral book report, I was so sick I couldn't leave the house. Okay? I couldn't. I couldn't stand up in front of people. I couldn't talk to people. I couldn't be, I was the one, don't look at me, but why aren't you paying attention to me? Right? That whole thing, you know, and all of that. So I love being up here. It gets my blood going. This is such a passion for me, and I love to talk about it. And if you want to talk to me later, I'm happy to talk about it until I collapse because I'm very tired. But I do want to say in closing that I take this program really seriously, really seriously. It saved my life. And more than saving my life by keeping me alive, it gave me the opportunity to want to have a life. When I got here, I didn't want to have a life. I didn't want to be alive. I didn't want to interact with you. I didn't want anything. I just wanted to disappear. And so if something just gave me the ability to keep living and have, you know, that wouldn't be enough for me because I didn't want to. You know, people say all the time, you know, oh, if you keep like this, you're going to die. You know, it's like doctors said to me all the time, you keep going like this, you're going to die. You got to lose weight. You're going to die. And I'm thinking, good. Now, if they had said to me, you're going to do this and suffer like this for a really, really long time, like years and years and years, maybe that would have scared me because I just wanted it to be done. And today, I cherish every day, you know, and I'm just grateful to be in a place where I can enjoy my life. It's not very dramatic. I don't have a lot of drama, you know. I don't like drama. I much prefer no drama. And when you start doing that, you think you're dead, right? Because, like, I'm used to, like, up and down and, you know, I have to be alive. I have to, you know, but the truth is I don't like drama. I like peace of mind. I like to be calm. I like to be free. I like to be able to decide what I want to do and do it. And if it doesn't work, then that's okay. You know, if things don't turn out the way I think they should, and here's the other real freedom. I don't have a think they should. To be totally honest, I don't even anymore plan how things should be. Why? It's such a waste of time because I'm not in charge and I don't get to decide. And don't forget, my best thinking, I'm going to eat till I die. So if I'm planning stuff, it's not going to work out so well. So I don't even think about that. You know, we talk about, you know, don't be, have an investment in the result, let go of that. I don't even think about a result because I'm in the moment. And I just live my life today the best I can. I'm not perfect, you know, and I still struggle with these things sometimes, but I get to see there's progress. And one of the things that I said, and I'll finish with this, to somebody earlier today is that what I love about this program is you don't have to wait till you're done to get the benefit. Day one, I got the benefit. Day one, I already benefited from one day of abstinence. And then you add days, and you get to benefit all along the way. I don't have to wait till I'm thin. I don't have to wait till I have a year. I don't have to wait until I graduate. I don't have to wait until I'm a step sponsor. I don't have to wait for any of that. Day one, I start to benefit from the program. And every day after that. And I don't know any place else where you get that. I don't know any place else that would give me what I get here. And I'm just so grateful. And I'm going to stop now. So thank you for letting me share.